It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Good afternoon and welcome back to the Dory Monson Show with me, guest host Jason Matera filling in, and we're going to get right to the Fastest 15. I forgot in the previous segment, Nicole reminded me, like, you missed the main point here. We were talking about Rose McGowan. She endorsed Larry Elder, but I never played the audio of her explaining why she endorsed Larry Elder, and it's because, one reason was because she had this very creepy exchange with Gavin Newsom's wife, Jennifer Newsom. And here is Rose McGowan talking about this very creepy exchange with Newsom's wife that happened right before the Harvey Weinstein charges really blew up.
So when I finally got on the phone with Jennifer Siebel Newsom for what I assumed was about movie projects, imagine my surprise when she says, "What can Boy Schiller do to make you happy?" And I had no idea who that was. So I just said nothing and hung up on her. That was my last contact with her.
And for some context, the Boyce, the lawyer she mentioned, was Harvey Weinstein's lawyer. And they knew, this is before the New York Times broke the story on Harvey Weinstein, which Rose McGowan featured, right? She was one of the, if not the first person to come forward and confront Harvey Weinstein publicly on his sexual predation. So before this all comes out publicly to light, here is Jennifer Newsom getting in touch with Rose McGowan and saying, "What can Harvey Weinstein's lawyer, this guy David Boyce, do for you?" And of course, the implication was, you know, how much money? And McGowan has intimated that there was a sum of $1 million offered by someone, which is actually, Nicole, quite a lot. If someone offered her potentially $1 million to stay silent on this allegation, it was stay silent and get $1 million to come forward. I know McGowan is a little bit of a nut, but that is a position of integrity, I must admit, for her to shrug off $1 million, someone who doesn't really have much of an acting career anymore, $1 million just because she wanted to stand on principle. I mean, how many people would do that?
I don't know. I hope not many, but I do think many.
I think many because a lot of people are bought off today in Hollywood because this is such the casting couch is maybe not as prevalent as it was previous generations, but it still happens today. Okay, moving on. The Fastest 15, the Washington Ensley's ridiculous anti-science mandate, outdoor mandate. We have the best, you know, the best ventilation you could imagine and could ask for goes into effect with gatherings of 500 people or more. I hope people flog this mandate. I hope people, I'm not going to ever outside wear a mask. Never. It's not going to happen. And I went to the state fair over the weekend, took my kids. They love Silly Land and, you know, it was beautiful weather and hours and hours there. I have funnel cake once a year, Nicole, and I felt disgusting after eating.
It's so delicious,
I felt like the oil was seeping out of my pores and the powdered sugar. But I couldn't stop. I mean, my quota for fried food had been met just at the state fair. Mm-hmm. All right. So anyway, I was curious and I wouldn't say nervous, but I'm like, man, I don't want to be, it's nice. I was like 75 degrees outside, sunny. Who wants to wear a mask? I will say that is a legitimate concern. And if you're concerned about going to the state fair and having to wear a mask, even though it is mandated, it was mandated in this case by Pierce County, and now you have the statewide mandate. If you're concerned, I don't want to wear a mask for 5 hours, 6 hours outdoors, I don't blame you. And you may not have to.
Well, I also went to the fair last week and it was a concern to me too. But you know, if you just keep your hands full of
food,
you're good.
Yeah, just be
for some
munching
reason,
on that hot dog.
COVID doesn't come after you when,
no,
you're,
when
eating,
you're eating
and drinking
it
at
doesn't.
The fair.
That's so, when I'm on an airplane.
I do appreciate, you know, and I was in Vegas this weekend, and it was kind of the same thing. It's nobody's harassing you to put on a mask. I mean, the businesses want to stay open, and I don't blame them. It's not their fault. You know, they were given this mandate. So the businesses are just trying to do what they can to survive, and I get that. And for the most part, I try to be respectful. And it's always on my chin, at least. If it comes down, it's usually on my chin. But, you know, nobody's coming around and handing out tickets for you not pulling your mask up in between bites or in between drinks or whatever it is. For the most part, people are cool and respectful. And if you want to wear a mask, that's awesome and whatever. And if you don't want to wear a mask, you know, have a drink in your hand.
Plus, because security is provided by sheriff's deputies that are all around there. So, I mean, they're the last people who are going to want to be enforcing
this. I don't know. I just think that for the most part, these stories of people, you know, freaking out on ferries and things like that, calm down.
I know.
Just calm down. They're just trying to stay in business. It's not their fault. Freak out on Inslee. I mean, don't do anything ridiculous, but I just mean, you know, let your voice be heard and, you know, send an email saying you don't appreciate this mandate, whatever. Be respectful. But don't
be like this guy.
Don't be like this guy.
This guy, which brings us to the next story, the Fastest 15. Some guy in his 50s, so not, I mean, you should know better, gets belligerently drunk on a ferry to Vashon Island over the weekend and refuses to wear a mask and becomes aggressive with employees. And there's no need for that. I mean, he's annoyed and irritated with the mandate, of course. And then he's drunk. It seemed to be a combustible combination there. But still.
The issue on planes and things like that, too. I think people you're taking it out on the wrong people. Yeah. The flight attendants are not choosing this for you.
I know.
The ferry workers are not choosing this. And everybody who you delayed that day on the ferry did not choose this. So don't take it out on the wrong people.
Well, now homeboy is banned from the ferry for 60 days. So was it worth it? I mean, what if the ferry was his...
If you're going to blow up like that on the ferry, like, you probably think it was worth it. I don't know. But it's I don't encourage it. And people, keep your cool. Just, we have ways
channels
that you can protest.
Yes.
We have, yeah.
It's not to a point where you need to have that. Well, that's not even civil disobedience. There's a difference between a civil disobedience, which I support, and acting like a jerk.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Don't act like a jerk. You're not going to persuade
anyone. Then you're representative of me, who also disagrees with some of the mask mandate stuff, right? So don't disrespect the rest of us.
I know. By the way, on planes, when you have to wear a mask, I sip the same cup of coffee, regardless of the duration of the flight, for hours.
Yep.
Do you want some more coffee? Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't even drink much coffee anymore, except for when I'm on an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next up, the Fastest 15. There's a new study. This is concerning and should put the pause button on this rush to mandate, to rush to vaccinate young people. And this study is out of the University of California. Hasn't been peer-reviewed yet. So there is that caveat. But the study concluded that healthy boys, and this is from the Telegraph out in London, which reported on the study, healthy boys may be more likely, 4 to 6 times more likely to develop heart inflammation after taking the government jab than ending up in the hospital due to COVID, right? So they're more likely to take the jab. When you're a healthy 12 to 15-year-old, get the jab, you're more likely, 4 to 6 times more likely to develop heart inflammation than get seriously ill from COVID. Now, we know that getting seriously ill from the Wuhan virus is nearly non-existent for young adults and for kids, right? We have less than 400 people, fewer than 400 people nationally in the 0 to 17 mark, I believe, have died due to COVID in the state. Those who are children, I think the number is 12. I mean, we should be grateful, right? We should have a grateful posture that this doesn't affect young people. It largely affects old people or those who have absolutely, absolutely awful lifestyles, dietary lifestyles. So, but this is a big development, and it should be looked into further. By the way, I don't think most people realize this, Nicole, is that many European countries, Britain included, have advised against young people getting the vaccine. They've advised against it. They're saying, listen, we've looked at the cost-benefit analysis, and we see that there's actually more of a cost to young people because the Wuhan virus rarely affects them. So this is a development. Again, hasn't been peer-reviewed, so that's an important point of to note there as other researchers and other scholars and medical personnel look into it.
I think this helps the case against mandating for in schools and things like that. And then when you're, and we're going to play audio, I think, of people saying that kids can get it in by Halloween probably. And then, you know, there's the argument that what kids have been vaccinated for other things forever. And why is this such a problem for people? And it's
because it doesn't affect them. That's why.
The polio comparison and
polio would make you crippled. That's the thing. Like,
exactly.
You had thousands and thousands, like tens of thousands of, I don't even know the number, but it was a lot. A lot of kids were, we're actually getting ahead of ourselves right now because we'll set up, because this is an ongoing debate. And you had on Fox News Sunday, Chris Wallace has just turned into an awful, I mean, he was always a shill for liberal policies, but he's getting worse and worse as he gets older. So he has the governor of Nebraska on, this guy, Pete Ricketts is his name. And the conversation on mandates happened. And here is how it began with Pete Ricketts, governor of Nebraska.
Well, first of all, we have been encouraging people to get vaccinated. We've been providing information and encouraging people to reach out to their neighbors because vaccines work and they will help people. But it should be a personal health care choice. This is not something that the government should mandate. And somebody shouldn't have to make the choice between keeping their job and getting a jab in the arm. I mean, it's just wrong. I've talked to people, a number of people, who have told me if they make me take the vaccine, I'm just going to be fired.
They're just going to be fired. And I've heard that from many people, too. It's just like 80% of the people who end up in hospitals with the Wuhan virus who are become ill are obese. They're like significantly overweight. Should the government be saying, all right, we're going to mandate that you eat broccoli. We're going to mandate that you eat salads. We're going to mandate how many chicken nuggets you can have at the Washington State Fair. We're going to mandate, you know, just a half funnel cake, not three. I mean, these are decisions, and we can say, yeah, those will all be healthy choices, but the government has no business in them. It's the same thing with the mandate. Well, here is how Chris Wallace responded to the governor of Nebraska.
You say it's a personal choice. In fact, to attend school in your state of Nebraska, children must be vaccinated against a number of diseases. Let me put them up on the screen. They must be vaccinated against diphtheria, tetanus and pertussis, polio, measles, mumps and rubella, hepatitis B, and chickenpox. Why are those mandates that parents in your state must comply with and do comply with routinely, why is it that they're not so objectionable and such a violation of personal freedom, but Biden's vaccine mandates are?
Well, for all those that you just listed, there's a long history that parents have had the opportunity to see how those things have been implemented. And there's still a lot of people out there who don't know what to trust. And in fact, this is really an outcome of what the CDC has done, because they flip-flopped on so many issues, whether it's masks or whether you have to mask after being vaccinated and so forth. There's just a lot of people out there who don't know who to trust right now. And so by having the government force it on, you're not building the trust where we have the trust with those other vaccines. This is a process that's going to take time to bring people along, and that's why it should be a personal choice and not something mandated by the government.
It's also an apples to trucks comparison when we're talking about measles and mumps, certainly polio and this new vaccine. These vaccines took, on average, a decade, 10 years to develop. In fact, the polio vaccine was developed too quickly, and I think they had to do a phase two because of some of the adverse reactions. But generally, a vaccine has taken 10 years to develop, especially when you're talking about kids. You have to, you know, you give a shot to an 8-year-old, you have to know how it's going to affect her when she's 18. Right now, the National Institute of Health has devoted almost $2 million now, after the fact, to study the vaccine effects on a woman's cycle. Now, after the fact. Maybe you should have done that before. So there's a lot of hesitancy because it's brand new. There's going to be that type of hesitancy. But also, the level of death and destruction and malaise caused by all the, certainly polio and the others, diseases that were mentioned far exceed anything felt by children, and we should be grateful for that. Rather than be grateful for that, there's a rush. I'm telling you, the pharmaceutical companies have done a lot. They've created so many miracle drugs over the years to help people. But let's not kid ourselves and think, well, this has nothing to do with the bottom line. They're getting billions and billions of dollars. And as soon as they can start injecting kids with this, they certainly will. In fact, here is Scott Gottlieb. He was the FDA administrator under Donald Trump, and now he's on the board of Pfizer. Oh, yeah.
Shocking.
I know, right? Oh, yeah. And he's advocating, right, for the mandates. Well, not the mandate. He's advocating for vaccinations. And no conflict of interest there. But here is him talking about when we'll possibly see vaccines in children.
You could potentially have a vaccine available to children age 5 to 11 by Halloween if everything goes well, if the Pfizer data package is in order, and FDA ultimately makes a positive determination. I have confidence in Pfizer in terms of the data that they've collected, but this is really up to the Food and Drug Administration to make an objective determination.
An objective determination. I'm sorry, it would be criminal, I think, to have the kids being jabbed when you have no long-term effect. You have no long-term studies. Zero. Zero long-term studies, and they're not affected by it. My kids had COVID. I mentioned on the show last week. It was gratefully a nothing burger for them. I had a fever for a day and a half, one of my kids. Two of my kids, no symptoms whatsoever. One of my daughters had a fever for a half a day. It was not a big deal for them. We should be grateful. My story is not something that is unique. The vast majority of kids aren't affected. And you have these dunce parents in our state who are lying about their kids as their children's ages, trying to get the vaccine. They're not 12, and they're like they're lying about the age because they want this jab in the arm. It's unconscionable. You would want to pump a kid with the drug when there's no long-term studies on the effect. And by the way, the conflict of interest between this guy, Scott Gottlieb of the FDA, formerly of the FDA, now on Pfizer. Similar conflict of interest with the National Institute of Health. I didn't know this until recently, Nicole, but do you know that NIH, National Institute of Health, again, they're supposed to be looking at all this data, coordinating with the FDA. They hold patents on so many vaccines and drugs. They get royalties. The more that are approved, they get royalties. They hold patents on the main Moderna and Pfizer vaccines. Some of their individual scientists get royalties up to $150,000 a year. I mean, it would be like if the EPA was getting royalties from the coal industry. Aren't you supposed to be regulating it? There's something not right there. I know, but I'm asking questions. And then, who are anti-vaxxer, Jason? No, man. Disingenuous. Jason Matera here, guest hosting for Dory Monson. Okay, when we return, this one judge is setting ridiculously low bail for individuals who are doing drive-bys at police officers. And let's see, a judge allows the lawsuit against the capital gains tax to proceed. We got that and much more news ahead on the Dory Monson Show. My name is Jason Matera. Good afternoon and welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. My name is Jason Matera, guest hosting for Dory, day three, final day, because Dory is back in the saddle, back in a seat tomorrow for the Dory Monson Show. So you get Dory back. Always a good thing. Okay, Nicole, I know we love to, well, not love, it's depressing when we talk about it, but we underscore how radical the city council is. We underscore how radical the city attorney's office has been under Pete Holmes and not prosecuting criminals and the defund the police and just making it such a hostile work environment for police officers over the past few years. But I know Dory mentions this often, and it goes unnoticed by many people, but included in the list of radicalized characters that are really descending to Seattle to a place where it's no longer livable are judges. Judges have such a key role in ensuring that criminals stay off the streets. But many times, judges are siding with the, in this case, the public defender's office that sides with the King County prosecutor's office or the local city attorney's office. I mean, they're all in cahoots together to make sure the criminal gets off as easy as possible. And by getting off as easy as possible is back on the streets to wreak havoc on taxpaying, law-abiding Seattle and King County residents. And we have another illustration of this, really shocking, because it this video of an ambush. You had an ambush of a Renton police officer where an idle car just pulled up and one individual shot 15 rounds. He had a Glock with an extended magazine and shot 15 rounds at a Renton police officer. There was a getaway driver as well. They didn't really get away. They got caught. Amazingly, no police officer was injured. So this guy is, I mean, in addition to being a criminal, terrible. I mean, 15 shots and missed, thankfully. Prosecutors, because he ambushed a police officer's, prosecutors asked for $1 million in bail for the shooter and $250,000 in bail for the getaway driver. Now, the shooter, to give you even more context, is wanted, or suspected, I should say, of another shooting involving a police officer and is already a convicted felon. So he's a convicted felon. He's suspected of shooting at another police officer at a different time. And he's on video. He's on video and arrested for shooting 15 rounds at a Renton police officer. So prosecutors asked for $1 million in bail for him and $250,000 for his accomplice. Now that seems about fair, right? Don't you think, Nicole? Seems about right. Seems about right. $1 million, $250,000.
Okay. Or no bail. Whatever.
Or virtually no bail, which they were given by a King County District Judge. He's a pro tem judge, meaning he serves when needed. So he has a law practice he's in, it's like a substitute judge. You need a judge, you know, you go in and you get this guy. His name is David O. O is his legitimate last name, apparently, just O. So David O. Prosecutors asked for $1 million in bail. Now, generally, what the judge does is split the difference or looks at the severity and decides to uphold what prosecutors ask. You don't have to be needlessly deferential to prosecutors, but you look in the circumstances. He lowered the bail for the actual shooter from $1 million to $50,000, which is nothing because you don't pay $50,000. You pay a fraction of that. You're let out of jail if you pay that fraction, and then it's if you skip bail. Or you don't show up to court, then you have to pay the $50,000. So this guy has now $50,000 of bail for both the shooter and the accomplice. This guy, David O, who is a substitute judge, runs a criminal law firm. So he's already deferential to criminals. Now, that's fine. Criminals need their defense attorney. I'm not against being a defense attorneys. You need defense attorneys. Because you are innocent until proven guilty. But this guy is showing no judicial temperament and no reasonableness when it comes to someone who just shot at police officers. There is good news, though. So there is that. And Nicole, I know Dory likes to call out the judges, and we need to continue to call them out because they are part of the problem here in King County, where we have these lax on crime and criminal policies, and they're just thrown back into the streets to victimize neighborhoods.
Right. He's compiling a list so that when it comes to vote time, then we can say, here's why you don't vote for these people. Here's why you do get somebody new in.
David O should be on the list.
Right.
David O.
On it.
On the list. Okay. That's a bad. The good news is somehow the decision was brought before another judge. And another judge decided to fix the error and increase the bail for the shooter to $500,000. Right, so it went from asking $1 million to $50,000 to $500,000. And by the way, that's generally what happens: is the judge would usually split the difference. So, all right, prosecutors ask for $1 million; they're always going to ask on the high end. All right, let me cut it in half: $500,000. All right, far more money that you have to put up than the $50,000 bond. The judge also decided to keep the accomplice's bail remaining the same. So if you're in front of David O and you decide to shoot at cops, you're in luck, criminal, because he is going to have your back. Another local story that is gaining some news is a Douglas County judge is allowing the lawsuit against the capital gains tax to move forward. Bob Ferguson, not surprisingly, is trying to get there's two lawsuits, and he's trying to get them thrown out. And grounds for one of the lawsuits being thrown out is that it doesn't actually get implemented until 2022, which means your tax bill, your tax liability for this capital gains tax doesn't happen until 2013. There's so many, dishonesty. There's so much dishonesty surrounding this capital gains tax coming from the state is because there is a long precedent, not only against the state income tax, but in the state constitution, Supreme Court ruling as far back as 1936 against a progressive income tax, a graduated income tax. That means if there is an income tax, everyone has to be taxed at the same rate. Yet this capital gains tax only applies to people making above or bringing above $250,000. $250,000. With exceptions to real estate transactions. So it's not this type of graduated income tax would be illegal, but the state is saying, well, you know, it's not an income tax. You know, it's an excise tax. It's a capital gains tax. And really, any tax on property is considered by IRS code an income tax. So this is something that is flatly unconstitutional. And whether the Washington State Supreme Court sees it that way eventually, if it gets to them, is another story. We will wait to see. By the way, it's a great way to drive out investors and business owners. What has attracted them to Washington State was a tax-friendly environment. So anytime the government says, oh, we're going to tax you more, we're going to get this amount of money, no, because money can be moved around. It's fungible, and people will take their investments and their business elsewhere as they are doing already. Okay, Jason Matera, guest hosting for Dori Monson. Bill Maher, amazingly, has been a voice of sanity against the woke left, and he's acknowledging that he's going after them. We got that sound for you coming up. And a lot more. Jason Matera, guest hosting for Dori. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Dori Monson Show. My name is Jason Matera, guest hosting for Dori. I gotta say, I've never been a fan of Bill Maher. Never thought he was that funny or insightful, but we live in such interesting times, and there's definitely political reorganization happening where people that you may not agree with on many issues, fundamental issues, you agree with them on sort of the larger issue taking place. Another one besides Bill Maher would be Glenn Greenwald, and he's a big leftist, right? Probably a socialist. I mean, the guy and I, he and I and most conservatives don't have any fundamental core beliefs in common, except for the similar Bill Maher, is the right of free speech imbued by the Constitution and the threat currently to free speech by the woke fascists running around culture and academia and the deplatforming and the canceling that is going on. And honest liberals like Maher and Glenn Greenwald see this threat, and ACL used to be here on this side too. They used to defend people who were reprehensible because they saw the larger issue at play. And Maher, while he's still a card-carrying liberal and still makes fun of Republicans on his show, he is honest about the true threat to American foundational principles, that is speech, the threat to conform to anything the government says, and it's mostly coming from the left. And he says the left has just been embarrassing him, and his show has been on now almost 20 years, And every week, it seems like he has another monologue against progressive woke culture. And this past week was no different. I want to play you just a bite from it because it you shake your head yes, and then you're like, oh, man, this is Bill Maher, and I'm agreeing with Bill Maher, and I never thought I'd be agreeing with Bill Maher.
To me, when people say to me sometimes, like, boy, you know, you go after the left a lot these days. Why? I'm like, because you're embarrassing me. That's why I'm going after the left in a way you never did before, because you're inverting things that I'm not going to give up on being liberal. This is what these teachers are talking about, that you're taking children and making them hyper aware of race in a way they wouldn't otherwise be. I mean, I saw last night on the football game, Alicia Keys sang Lift Every Voice and Sing, which now I hear is called the Black National Anthem. Now, maybe we should get rid of our national anthem, but I think we should have one national anthem. I think when you go down a road where you're having two different national anthems, colleges sometimes now have, many of them have different graduation ceremonies for black and white, separate dorms. This is what I mean, segregation. You've inverted the idea. We're going back to that under a different name.
It's hard to disagree with anything Bill Maher said there. The left is embracing segregation. They're embracing the abhorrent idea of separate but equal, with the separate, and many major universities do that, separate graduation ceremonies, not just for white and black. They have some for Latinos, the LGBTQ plus whatever. They have their separate graduation ceremonies. You have the separate dorm rooms. I mean, you cannot have a functioning country with this type of separatism. Right. You got to have the white national anthem played at football games. Then you have the black national anthem. It is absurd. It is our national anthem is just fine as is. And you don't need to have more grievance. You know, we talked about it last week, a professor out in Portland State University who resigned and says academia has just become one social justice factory where the inputs are race and gender and oppression. And the outputs, what you get from that, are grievance, culture, and divisiveness. With the outset of wokeness, which is social justice mixed with postmodernist garbage, has America been more agreeable? Has it been more kind? Absolutely not, because you're telling people to be focused on the difference, and not just focused on the difference, to be at war with someone who may have a different skin color than you or a different gender. And there's automatically some built-in matrix of oppression between the two of you. Cannot have a functioning society with that going on. The black national anthem? How absurd is this? And listen, Alicia Keys has an amazing voice. She can have her sing the national anthem. By the way, did you see opening day when they did opening?
No, I was preoccupied in Vegas.
Oh, you were preoccupied. I
did get a lot of the Seahawks game, but
did they play the Black National Anthem?
I don't think so. I did see a 9/11 tribute. That was beautiful.
I'm sure Pete Carroll did not like that. Jason Matera, he's a truther. Jason Matera here, guest hosting for Dory Monson. When we return, we are going to talk about how the media is now trying to paint those who are skeptical of the COVID vaccine as white supremacists. And right here, our neighbors in Idaho. Big story about that we're going to break down for you. Jason Matera, guest hosting for Dory Monson. We'll be back in a flash.